Good morning, everyone. So we are going to pick up sort of where we left off with, which is the Mishnah on Hey Amud Aleph. So last time, so just to recap what we've been covering until now, so we've been learning in the sugya prior to paternity leave. Hey Amud Aleph, Hey Amud Aleph. So what we were talking about last time is we had just wrapped up the sugya of Runya and his situation with Ravina, where Ravina had encircled his property with a number of other pieces of land, and Runya was upset about the way that that went down because they forced him to pay for the wall that was put up, and we went back and forth where the wall was and how much of the wall should he have to pay, etc. That was what we covered last time. So the Mishnah in Daf Hey Amud Aleph is picking up in a similar vein, but now moving on to a slightly different component, which is going to be what we'll call our first real Bava Basra Sugya of this Masechta, and that is, how do you know and how do you enforce payment when two partners are supposed to reimburse each other, right? So until now, we've been assuming that if you can force the other guy to share in building the wall, so if the first four daf of this Masechta, we assumed that that means you can take him to court and the court will make him actually help you build the wall or tell him that he's off the hook. So what happens if you actually built the wall and now you want to get him to pay for his half? So how do you know whether or not he ever really did pay, and whether his claim that he did pay is in fact correct and true? And what do we do if there's a dispute over payment and whether or not the payment was ever received? So that's what this Mishnah is dealing with, and that's what we're going to talk about today. This is going to be a multi-part sugya, so we're going to just start by establishing the basic fundamentals of the Mishnah and the Gemara, and maybe take a look at some of the introductory Rashis and Tosfos about this sugya. So here we go. The Mishnah says in the middle of Hey Amud Aleph, towards about halfway down the page, Kosel chatzer shenafal mechayvin oso livnoso. Right, if you have the wall of a chatzer of your courtyard, that remember a chatzer is one of those places where we know that you can force the other side to build. Right, so that's why the Mishnah is clearly highlighting that, because that's what we're going to be dealing with, a dispute between two partners here. So the chatzer, which you can for sure force the other side to join you in building a wall, and that wall falls down. So you have to rebuild it. And how high do you have to rebuild it? Ad arba amos, until four amos. Now the Mishnah says something interesting. Becheskas shenasan ad yavi raya shelo nasan. If there was a wall there and it fell down and now you rebuilt it, we will assume that the person that was supposed to pay for half the wall, meaning the other guy, gave his share of whatever he was supposed to give until such time as you can prove that he did not pay. That's the first half of the Mishnah. Me arba amos ulamalan, ein mechayvin osa. Higher than four amos, you can't be mechayvim to join you in building the wall.
Four amos is in height.
Yeah. No, thickness was the first mission of the Masechta. Yeah. That was up to anywhere between 3 and 6 tfachim, right? And then four amos is the height, because that's the minimum height for preventing hezek re'iyah, assuming that that's the model that we're working with.
It's really
high. 6 feet. There's a myth out there that amma means 2 feet for some reason, but an amma is actually about a foot and a half. So it's 6 feet. For amma, it's 6 feet. Yeah, it's not so high. It's a regular size fence. Say in suburbia, a 6 foot fence is might even be considered a little low. Saying people prefer an 8 foot fence. There are certain municipalities that require only a 4 foot fence. And if you've ever seen a 4 foot fence, you know that there's no prevention of hezek re'iyah whatsoever with a 4 foot fence. 6 foot fence is kind of like, you know, for somebody like you, it's not going to stop. It's going to stop somebody like me from seeing, right? 8 foot fence, now we're talking. So a real machmir amma, but at minimum, a 6 foot fence at least serves as a separation from the passersby, right? Fine. That's the first half of the Mishnah. Samach lo kosel acher. So now that you have this wall between your two properties, now you go ahead and you build a second wall parallel to the first wall that was built. Not on the other end of your property, next to the wall, and we'll see why that's important in a minute. Af al pish lo nasan alavas hatekra, even though you have not roofed in these two walls, nonetheless, megalgin alav es hakol. The guy who builds the second wall has to pay for the entirety of the first wall. Why? Because what did you now see by building that first wall? It wasn't about splitting up your property. You wanted to build a shed in your yard. Right? People have sheds in their yard in suburbia to store the lawnmower, to store the deck chairs, whatever. So you want to build a shed. So in order to build the shed, you need generally speaking, at least two walls and something on top of it. So if you build a wall in between the two properties and you force the other guy to join you simply because, what do you mean? I could force him to join me because it's a chatzer, right? So I could force him to pay. But really your intention was to build a shed. So now that there's a wall here, oh, now I could build a second wall and put my fence over it. I only put my ceiling up to half of the wall. What do you mean? That's my half of the wall. So then we know, okay, the whole thing was only a trick, which is to get him to pay for half of your shed or a quarter of your shed, whatever it is. So now you're going to have to pay for the whole thing. And if that's the case, b'cheskas shelo nasan ad yavi raya shenasan. And we assume that whatever was supposed to be paid back, presumably, was not paid back until such time as it was proven to be paid back. So if I, in fact, now have to pay for the entire wall, but there's a wall here, right? Just like the first half of the Mishnah, the assumption is that the other guy on the other side of the property line helped build the wall, and we assume that he now paid, unless we prove he didn't pay. So now that there's a wall here, and I build my second wall, and now I'm going to have to pay for everything, we assume that I did not pay him back until such time as I can prove that, in fact, I did. Everybody with me? Meaning it's the logical flow. That's the simple reading of the Mishnah. So now the Gemara is going to try and figure out whether or not that's any of this is even true, and whether or not it's actually how we paskin. But before we get there, so let's take a look at Rashi. So Rashi says, Mechayven also livnos at arba amos. We're going to read all the Rashi in the Mishnah. Rashi says, the behachi sagi lehezik ri'iya. Right, this, why do you need four amos? Because that's enough for hezek ri'iya, consistent with Rashi's position so far throughout the Masechta. Becheska shenasa. And if there's already a wall there and then you rebuild it, we assume that the other party paid his fair share, unless you can prove that he didn't. Im amar ha'echa la'achar shebeno. If one partner says to the other, after the wall was rebuilt, ani asisiv mishali, I built the whole thing on my own, shelo ratza zelisayini, because you didn't want to help me out, v'tov o chatzi hayitzia, and now he comes to Beis Din to claim half of the expenditures of the wall from his friend as reimbursement, v'zeh omer nosati chelki, and the other guy said, and if you are in conflict, so we know the principle of hamotzi mi chavera alav haraya. So since the presumption is that you paid for your half because the wall is standing here, and it's a chatzer where we know that you could have forced him in the first place, and in fact he already contributed stones and whatever to the wall when it was first built, it fell down, now you rebuild it, there's no reason to think that he didn't pay his half. So therefore, unless you can prove he didn't pay his half, you'll assume that the other guy is off the hook.
Does the Gemara go into the proverbial, how do you prove the negative?
Well, you don't have to prove the negative here.
Well, you do. You have to prove that he didn't do something.
Oh, so what we're going to talk about is, what does it mean to say that you paid back? Meaning, it's not how do you prove that he didn't pay back, but how do you prove that, in fact, you did pay back, or how do you prove that it couldn't be possible for him to have paid back? I mean, you can never prove that somebody didn't do something, but you can always prove around it and see it from the negative. Meaning there are times in halacha, which is why I'm picking on this, there are times in halacha where you can prove that something didn't happen, right? That's the entire mechanism of Eidim Zomim, right? Two Eidim come and say, I saw you kill Yenim on 86th Street. And I come with another aid and say, not possible. You two guys were on 96th Street at Krispy Kreme at the same time that you said you saw the murder. Right? Right? So now we know that we proved that did not happen. Right? Right? So that's not this. Meaning, that's clear. And we're not talking about Adam Zone here.
I get that.
Fine. So, but it's a fair point because the Gemara is going to address this very clearly. But before we get there. Ask.
What type of chazaka is this?
Good. That's the Gemara's question.
So the Gemara, So
the whole sugya here is trying to figure out what exactly is this chazaka in the Mishnah that the Mishnah assumes that you could say b'cheska shenasan or b'cheska shelonasan, right? What does that mean? Now, just in Choshen Mishpat in general, right? So we have muchzak, which is whoever's holding the cash or whoever has first rights. We have marakama, which is the first owner. Right, the person who we assume to be the standard owner in any given situation. And then we have the motzi, or the toveya, as Rashi will call him, the claimant, the person who's trying to extract money from someone else. Now, we know the principle of hamotzi mechaver lav haraya, and the reason why is because in halacha, possession is 10/10 of the law, not 9/10. If you have it, it's yours until proven otherwise. Now, if we know that the way you have it was unlawfully gained, so then you don't have it. You might just be holding it. So you might still be called the muchzak, but it's still not yours. That's what's called shelo ubir shuso, or shelo vishelo bir shuso, or lo shelo, or shall the other guy, ubir shuso. And there's different permutations here. So we're not going to deal with any of those things. That's really a Hilchos Gzela Sugya and a Hilchos Shomrim Sugya. We'll leave that for Bava Kama and Bava Metzia. But in Bava Basra, we're going to talk about the Marakama, the Muchzak, and the Toveya, Toein, or Motzi. Those are the players that we're going to discuss. So this is the first Sugya. That's what I call the real Bava Basra Sugya, because we're trying to figure out, well, what is this Chazaka, right? What is this Chazaka that we assume the guy paid his half until proven otherwise? Why? Why would we assume that? And what possible reason would we say that you need a chazaka? Right? Just before we even go further in Rashi, why would I even need a chazaka? Let's say I don't have a chazaka here. Right? So the other guy claims he paid, and I said he didn't pay. What do I want? I want him to pay his half. Hamotzimir chaver levaraya. So what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? Right? Becheska shenasan ad sheyavi raya shelo nasan. Really? Yeah, we know that already. Thank you, Mishnah. Hamotzi mechaver levaraya. That's what that's called. I don't need a chazaka to tell me that. If I ever want to extract money from somebody, I have to bring proof. So what's the chiddush in the Mishnah telling me? Oh, if you built the wall, we assume that he paid his half until you could prove that he didn't pay his half. Like every other case of motzi mamon from somebody else, right? Every case of motzi mamon, you have to prove it. So what's the Mishnah talking about, right? That's the key, and that's what the Gemara is going to try to address and show that it's not that simple. Because as it turns out, time plays a factor in reimbursements and repayments. So that's what the sugya in the Gemara is going to address. We're going to get there in a second. Fine. So Rashi continues, Ach yavi hatoveya, right, meaning the claimant, the person who built the wall here, Edim, he brings witnesses that what? Shetavo vilo nasan lo. He brings witnesses that the other guy was taken to Beis Din, was claimed from in front of witnesses, and he did not pay the claim. Dekivan dechova alav l'sayo. Since he is obligated to help build the wall, umishpat zela kol galoy, and everybody can see this halacha. Why? Because everybody can walk by and see the wall built. What? No, you can see the wall. You can see the wall built, right? Everybody knows whether the wall was or in fact was not built. So since, and we know he has to build it, lo hayabona mishalo el hayatzoi galav beistin, right? Since everybody knows that this other guy would have to pay, so what would happen if he didn't want to pay? So you come to Beis Din and you whine about it, right? My neighbor doesn't want to help me build the wall. So there's no reason to think that unless you can bring witnesses that you claimed the money from this guy and he said, no, I'm not paying you, to think that he actually didn't pay. Because you have a much easier claim, which is don't build the wall yet. Just go to Beis Din in the first place and say, this guy won't pay me, right? If you went to him and said, hey, pay for half the wall, and he says no, and then you go ahead and build the wall anyway, what kind of chacham does that? Right? You could have just gone to bed and say, hey, this guy's not doing what he's supposed to do. And Beis Din would have said, pay him half the money to build the wall. You're mechuyev. Like, it's obvious. That'll be the shortest psak in the history of Bati Din. Right? And yet, you didn't do that. Why not? So obviously the presumption is that he did his share, and now you have to prove that you claimed the money from him and he refused you. And therefore, you know he didn't pay. Now, Tosa is going to pick up on what Rashi's lineup here, because Rashi makes two big assumptions. The first is that you needed to bring Edim to get him to claim the money from him, which is not necessarily true, right? When people owe you money, there's no prescription in halacha that requires you to bring witnesses to the process of repayment, right? Saying, for example, you may have maybe, I don't know how a mortgage works, I'd never take one out, but maybe you have to sign a witness on a mortgage document. But what I know is that when you pay your monthly mortgage, there are no two witnesses standing by to watch you click the button that sends the money from your bank account back to the bank. That I know, right? Why not? So that's one of Tosis's questions on Rashi's assumption is, why is your whole story starting with the fact that since we presume he had paid his half, and you could really have gotten it easier by just coming to Beis Din, that this only is going to be provable if you would have brought two witnesses that you claimed the money from him and he refused to pay? Why? That doesn't prove anything, right? Why would you need to bring witnesses in the first place? And why would he need to respond to your claim if the presumption, of course, is that he built his half of the wall? Why are we not just assume that you are trying to extract money, shelo kalacha, from him? Right? That's equally as reasonable assumption.
Well, because Gemara says you got to prove that he did it.
But I'm saying, the toveya, right? The toveya, the claimant here, is going to the other guy who, there's no reason to think he didn't do his part. The haraya, there was a wall here, right? So he's going to come and say, well, I brought, what's his proof that he didn't pay? I brought witnesses to show him. I, in front of two witnesses, I said, I want my money. And he said, no.
You're saying there could have been another time where the Nitzba could have already paid?
Yeah, he might have paid already. He might have paid already. And that's the reason why he said no. So what are your two witnesses proving? They're proving nothing.
There was no original chiyah for him to pay back when there were witnesses.
So, because, that's, right. So there's no, that's no proof at all.
But then what you're saying is all I have to say is I paid and now I'm basically off the
good. Board. So that's exactly what I wanted you to say. Now the reason why I'm saying that, perfect. You step right into the bear trap. Got you.
I feel like I'm just a setup.
Thank you. The reason why is because the Gemara is going to point this out. That when we talk about who owes who money in Beis Din, so parenthetically, I always find this a little troubling because a lot of Chosh and Mishpat and the way that we figure out who owes who money is based on the type of claim that you make. Now, it's strange because the way you think about who owes who money is, okay, who actually owes money, right? Whose obligations have to be repaid. But in terms of enforcement, oftentimes we rely on the claims that people make. So is there a difference between a guy who says, no, I'm not paying you because what are you talking about? This is not a thing. We built this wall together years ago. I'm not paying you nothing. I owe you nothing. This is a made up claim. And a guy who says, No, I already paid you back. If you say I already paid you back, that's the claim of parati. Parati, I paid back your loan. Now, there's a difference, as we're going to see in the halacha, in the Gemara and in the halacha, between somebody who says, lo hayu devar me'olam, get out of here, I have no idea what you're talking about, somebody who says, lo lavisi, I never borrowed money from you in the first place, and somebody who says, parati, I paid you back. Because by definition, the claim of I paid you back is a partial admission. It's recognition that I, in fact, did engage with you in some form of transaction. Let's presume a loan for easier purposes, right? I did engage with you in a loan, but that loan is now over.
But I hate to say it, this is a little bit like looking up on the internet how to pass a polygraph test.
Yes. So this is why in Beis Din, we rarely, rarely, rarely strictly stick to the technical terminology that people use when they make claims, because at the end of the day, it's very easy for people to get a little bit educated and then know exactly what to say. And in fact, in the Beis Din of America, and I'm happy I'm saying this on recording, in the Beis Din of America, we do not allow toanim, which are, the technical term is the claimer, but what it really is like a halachic lawyer, somebody who comes in and will argue with the Beis Din to try and come up with a halachic argument why you're correct within halacha. And one of the classic strategies that these toanim will use is to use, they'll make claims that they know the Gemara will support that will force the other side to take an oath in halacha. Now, the counterbalance between a claim is to force the other side to take a shvua. Now, the problem is that based in today, we don't enforce shvuos. We don't really do that anymore. So that means that one of our limitations is that we don't have the check on certain types of claimant powers. Therefore, these toanim are very bright. They know halacha. They've learned the sugyas. They've been sitting in koil for a long time. That's how they make money. Saying a toin in Borough Park can get upwards of $1,000 an hour to represent a client in Beis Din. So it's a good business. Maybe not the most yashar business, but it's a good business. And so we don't allow toin in for this reason, because we're not interested in your choppy, well, I could have said this, and since I said this, Taina, instead, I'm going to get, therefore you should award me the, I'm not interested. I want to know what are the facts. Mr. Litigant here, just tell me what happened. You, co-litigant, just tell me what happened, and we'll figure out who owes you money. And that's what we do. But there is such a concept of, I'm saying, based in the event that there are no witnesses and no documentation. And so sometimes we have to rely on what people tell us. So if a guy comes with a claim, so we have to figure out, how do we know if he's telling the truth? So one of the mechanisms to tell if somebody's telling the truth, which is what we're going to discuss in the Gemara, is called amigu. I could have said A, which is a better claim, and since I said B, believe me, when I say B, because if I was going to lie, I would have lied and said A. That's called amigu demali l'shaker. What do I have to lie? Because if I was going to lie, I would have lied better. Now, the problem is that sometimes that doesn't work because sometimes there's even a worse claim you could make, so you are lying better. You're just not lying as great as possible. Right? So you didn't shoot for 100, you shot for a 90. Okay, but so what? And that itself we're going to discuss as well. So that's why I say this is the first Bava Basra sugya, because a major chunk of the third parak of Bava Basra is all about figuring this out. What do you do when there's no documentation, there are no witnesses, and you have competing reasonable claims where everybody thinks they're right? How do you adjudicate these disputes? It's very difficult. So the bulk of what makes Bava Basra so difficult is the 35 pages of the third parak and scattered sukkahs throughout the rest of the Masechta that deal with this exact question. How do you stack these things up? So this is one of the elementary sugyas in getting to this broader picture, which is why I love this sugya, because it's like the first foray that the Gemara ever goes into in trying to assess how this type of claim process works. So back to Rashi for a second. Rashi's whole thing, remember, is based on the fact that you could bring witnesses that you claimed the money and that the guy didn't pay. Now, Tosfos is going to have a problem with that, as we just highlighted some of which we'll see that in a couple of minutes. Rashi continues. Samach lo kos al acher, right? What if you build your parallel wall, right, your shed wall, to show that you're going to build a shed? La'achar shibno ha'echad l'mala me'arba amos harbe. Rashi makes a huge assumption here, that the second half of the Mishnah is not talking about the lower half of the wall, it's where you built an upper part of the wall. You built more than 4 amos high. V'lo ratza ha'achar l'sayo b'hagba'aso. And the other guy did not want to pay for the raised portion, which he's not required to, right? Because remember, Rashi's whole thing is that it's about hezek re'iyah, which means the only time you're chayev to pay for your half is for to prevent hezek re'iyah. Higher than 4 amos, hezek re'iyah is not relevant. Fine. So samach hasheni kosel acher keneged kosel zeh, and now you built a second high wall to build your shed or your extension to your house or whatever it is. Kedei l'sakech uvlatzitz alav tikra mikosel l'kosel. Afal pishin losen alav adayna tikra, even if you have not yet built the ceiling. Right? You showed that the addition on the second wall is further is something that you wanted, but not the lower part. Right? So Rashi takes it out of context of the simple reading of the Mishnah, which is not Megalgan Olavas HaKol, the shared wall, because remember, Rashi still thinks that it's all about Hezek Re'iyah, which means that whether or not you're planning to build a shed here, that doesn't change the other guy's chiyuv to prevent Hezek Re'iyah. So even if you do demonstrate, ultimately, that you only want a wall between your property so you could build a shed, says Rashi, you could still charge the other guy for half of the 4 amah high wall because that's still his chiyuv. It's true, you also want him to build it for other purposes, maskim. But it doesn't change the fact that he is, in fact, chayiv because of hezek re'iyah. Now, what if we took the position of the Rush? This has nothing to do with hezek re'iyah, or that you could waive hezek re'iyah. So then maybe you could say that simple reading the Mishnah, Megalgan Levas HaKol, means, yeah, now that you've showed that this was just a trick to get him to pay some of your costs, now you have to pay for the whole thing, right? But Rashi's not working with that. So now we now have a problem. Why? Because if Rashi's saying that we're only talking about the second half of the wall, so now we have a bigger problem. The Mishnah's next line is, Becheskas Shelo Nasan. Becheskas Hu Shelo Nasan. So does it mean that the other guy didn't pay for the raised portion of the wall? Well, that's what he's claiming. So what's the Becheskas Shelo Nasan? Obviously he didn't pay, he doesn't want to pay, and he should never be chayiv according to Rashi. So what does Becheskas Shelo Nasan mean? Rashi says, in Baha Rishon, V'tavo L'din, La'akar Shav Samach Es Koslo, L'Koslo Rishon. If the first guy comes and says, takes the other guy to Beis Din, after he put his wall next to it, V'omer Lo, Tein Li Chelkecha B'mashe Higbesi. You give me back half the money with what I helped you raise the wall, v'ze omer nasati chelki, and the other guy says, what are you talking about? I paid my portion already. Eino ne'eman. He's not believed, ela be'edim, without witnesses, she'ein mishpat ze goli lakol. Not everybody sees what's happening here. Why? Because you don't ever have to really pay for the raised addition. V'ad she'chayvuhu based in eino asulitin. And therefore, there was no presumption that the other guy would have paid for his half of the raised portion of the wall, unless Beis Din would have forced him to pay. Now this is Rashi doubling down on his kind of strange reading of the Mishnah, right? Rashi is interpolating a whole bunch of assumptions into the case of the Mishnah in order to make it not about the lower half of the wall. Now the reason why Rashi is doing that is because Rashi wants to assume that this whole Mishnah is still talking about Hezek Re'iyah, and that that's the only modus operandi for these two guys to split to build a wall in the first place, and therefore that should never be touchable. Now, the reason why that's challenging is because in the first half of the Mishnah goes out of its way to tell you Becheskas Shenasan, which we already raised seems to be counter to the ruling of Hamotzi Mechad Yerlev Haraya. So why is the Mishnah even telling me that in the first part of the wall, even according to Rashi, the lower 4 amos, that that's Becheskas Shenasan, if that should be obvious? According to Rashi's whole explanation, this whole Mishnah is reading backwards. The Mishnah shouldn't be written like this at all. You should take the word Becheskas Shenasan out of the Mishnah according to Rashi and only include them in the second half. And the Mishnah should have specifically said that Megalgan Levis HaKol means only the upper half. Ikr Chasr Menasefer, according to Rashi's Pshat. So Tosos starts to raise some of these issues. So we're going to run out of time. So let's take a look at Tosos here. Tosos says in Me'arba Amos Ulamala and Tosos Afalpi. So we're going to take a look at those two Tosos right now. So Tosos says Me'arba Amos Ulamala Ein Mechayv Noso V'Chulu Becheska Shlo Nasan. Right, the upper half of the wall. Right, Rashi's pshat is that the bottom half of the wall, everybody has to pay their half. But in the upper half of the wall, if you want the other guy to pay for it, you're going to assume that he didn't pay unless you can prove. You're going to assume that he paid unless you can prove that he didn't pay. Right? Becheska shelo. Sorry, the opposite. Becheska shelo nasan ad shevi raish nasan. You're going to assume he did not pay unless he can prove that he in fact did pay, and therefore he would owe you the money unless you built your second wall. So if you just build the extension upwards and now you want to be paid for half, so you can get it from him unless the presumption is, unless he can prove that he paid. That's how Rashi understands the Mishnah. Says Tosos, Iri, what's this whole case? Kigon diadinan de kadam chad va'arte lechavre. One guy, the case in this Mishnah has to be a situation where we know that guy A, we'll call him Reuven, went to his friend Shimon and convinced him to help build the wall. And now Shimon is saying, I'm not interested. You can't force Shimon to pay. And therefore, it's in the bucket of the chazaka that he did not yet pay, because there's no chiyah for him to pay. Right? And he doesn't have to pay for anything when this guy builds his decorative top, you know, top half of the wall. He's off the hook. Now, why is Tosa saying that? Because how did Rashi explain this? Rashi said the other way, right? That this is all about whether the Edim are going to come and testify that he did not yet pay or did pay for his half. Why would you say that? So this is a much simpler read of the Mishnah, which is the read that we started with today, which is very simple, right? Even if you want to tell me it's about the upper part of the wall, naniach, fine. There was no chiyah for this guy to pay. So what does the Mishnah read? That's parentheses. So the way you would read the Mishnah according to Tosfos is halfway through the Mishnah it says, Me'arba Amos Ulamalan, right, from the four Amos and upwards, Ein Mechayv Noso, you cannot force Shimon to pay for that part of the wall. Why? Because it's above four Amos. And Becheska Shelo Nasan. And we're going to assume, because you can't force Shimon to pay, that he in fact did not pay Ad Shavri Raya Shenasan. So why is that important? Because if it turns out that Shimon will have to pay for half the wall, whatever reason we may concoct, let's say Shimon agreed to a contract that he was supposed to pay for half that part of the wall, and he didn't. Or let's say Shimon goes ahead and builds a wall parallel to this partner wall in order to build a shed, right? So we'll assume, because Shimon was never chayiv, that Shimon didn't pay anything until such time as he can prove that he paid Reuven. Right, and that's a much smoother read of the Mishnah. Right, no Edim, no Tvios, no Galui Lakol, none of that.
So I have this maybe a completely random question. Let's say on both sides of the wall, previously they had both built two-story houses.
Yeah.
So at that point, can you take the presumption that the Cheskes Re'ia was made to be
higher? Okay, good. So this is possibly a sugya that we should have covered earlier. I didn't address it because it's not mefurish in the Gemara. The Rishonim asked that question, and they use this Mishnah as, I mean, they fight about what this Mishnah means because this Mishnah is a little choppy, but they fight about whether or not that means that Hezek Re'ia can or cannot be extended. And the case in point that they use is similar. It's not exactly that case. They use what happens if you have a multi-level property where your house is lower and this guy's house is higher. So do you have to pay for a wall that goes up for Amos, since this guy can never see into his property, but this guy can only see down. Exactly. So it's the same idea. It's Machlokas Rishonim at the end of the day. And again, the svaras are obvious, right? Because you could argue, what do you mean? Hezek Re'ia, however high up it goes. Or you could say, like the Mishnah seems to imply, Hezek Re'ia only operates till four Amos. Anything after that,
that's your problem.
We can't govern that. Right. And look at this city, right? You're not going to put fence lines between buildings, you know, Adarakia, it's impossible. So, Lemaisa, it makes more sense, at least from, again, working with the Rush's building code model that we established the very, very beginning of the Masechta, right, that these are more like zoning laws. So it makes a lot of sense to assume that four Amos was legislated. Anything above that, you can't legislate. You can agree on, but further than that, it is impossible to force anybody because in Ladavar Sof. Right? So what if you build a third story and a fourth story? What if you dig down, right? What if you build an extended out, right? there's no way to end these things, right? And now it's going to be on all four sides, right? If you live in suburbia, right, especially if you live in parts where the lots are narrow, it's going to be crazy. You're going to have to build everything. We'll live in a fortress. It's going to look like Queens with the Bukharians, right? Impossible, right? Nobody wants to live like that except for in Queens. Fine. So that's the answer here. Okay, fine. So that's the first Tosos. Second Tosos.
Sorry. Can you just quickly summarize what Tosos was?
Yeah, Tosos is just proving that there's a much simpler read of the Mishnah. Don't interpolate when the Mishnah goes off on a tangent and says Samach lo kosel acher. Don't fuse that with the question of first four amos or next four amos. That's a separate issue. Pull it out. The Mishnah reads the first four amos. The assumption is that both sides paid. The next four amos. The assumption is that the person who should not have had to pay didn't in fact pay. That's the Mishnah. If in fact the guy, one of the two sides, and it doesn't matter which one, now build a second wall to show that he wants this height from the first wall. So now we'll force that person to pay for everything. So if the other guy built a higher wall because he wanted him to pay for Hezek Re'ia, and now he goes and builds a wall equal height in order to build a shed, so we'll force him to pay for half of the wall that Reuven put up because now it shows that he wants his half of the wall, right? If Reuven, in fact, put up the wall by himself and is now trying to get Shimon, who's like, I don't want your 19-foot wall in my backyard. I don't need that. Thank you very much. So then there's no way to force him to pay. And there's no reason to think that he, in fact, owes the money. So if Reuven comes to Beis Din and says, I have two witnesses that he won't pay, who cares, right? And that's also his point, which is Rashi's whole witness business is unnecessary because who cares about the witnesses? The witnesses don't prove anything because there was never a chiyuv in the first place. Witnesses are only helpful, right? Another way to phrase this, witnesses are only helpful when there's a valid claim in the first place, right? You can't testify to the veracity of a claim if that claim has no founding in the first place.
So then the chazaka and the mishnah is that he didn't have to pay and he didn't pay.
Right.
So what's the mishnah going to
test? That if you come with a claim, your claim is irrelevant. We don't care what you bring to support your claim. Meaning the chazaka kills off your claim before it starts. That's how Tosa seems to be interpreting the Mishnah. Why is that a problem for you?
Why does the Mishnah have to tell you that the chazaka is still not
done? Because what if I come two witnesses without any claim, right? If I come and say, I bring two guys who say, you owe me money. Nathan owes me $1,000. Two witnesses, prove it. Al pi shnai meidim yakum davar. What right does Beis Din have to ignore two witnesses that say that you owe me $1,000? Right? So now, what would be your response? Lo hayu dvar me'olam, these guys are full of it, right? So what should Beis Din do? The Torah literally says, two witnesses say that you owe me $1,000. So how should they ignore that? So in such a situation, right, and this is why Rashi highlights the words, v'galoi lakol, right, everybody sees the fence. That's what's in halacha called an anan sa'adi, right? We don't need formal witnesses because these things are observable. They're factually observable. We could just open our eyes and look at them and see what it is. So there's no reason for two witnesses in a case where like this that we shouldn't trust them. Why? Because two witnesses have a presumption of kashrus. You're denying it probably because you don't want to pay me back, right? So that's reasonable. But in a situation where we're building a wall, all we have to do is walk by the property line. Is the wall there or is it not there? If the wall's there, so then we assume that it followed normal procedures. Now, oh, you have witnesses that say, not. Why would we care about your witnesses that normal procedures weren't followed if we can observe that what everything is supposed to be is in fact there? So if you want to prove that the wall that you claim that should be paid for by both and is standing there was in fact not paid for by both, so prove it. Meaning we don't care about your two witnesses. Your two witnesses won't be sufficient because to say two witnesses, I built the wall by myself, won't be enough. He'll need two witnesses that he was asked for the money and didn't pay. That's Rashi's point. Tosa says, I don't care about that. I have a much simpler chazaka. The chazaka is you're the muchzak. You are holding the money. So when both of them are assumed to be holding the money, so you want to prove that that's not true, so you have to prove that it's not true in the normal fashion. That's all. It's a much simpler read of the Mishnah.
It's interesting where Rashi is usually such a b'shat guy, twists himself into such a...
Yes, here. Correct. Yeah. I imagine Rabbeinu Tam said that about his grandfather a lot. I said about my grandfather, so I'm saying Elif Alfe Havdalos, I'm not Rabbeinu Tam, but I imagine it's not something that grandfathers and grandchildren don't often debate about. But but again, remember, there are idiosyncrasies in the Mishnah that Rashi's picking up on, right? These chazakos are weird chazakos, they're strange. We're going to get to the definition of the chazaka. The Gemara itself highlights possibly what this chazaka is, and it may have nothing to do with, by the way, muhzak, or whose side of what is on and who owes money to who. So we're going to get to that. We're not going to get to that today. Let's just do the second Tosos here, and then we'll wrap up for the day. So Tosos says, "An afal pi shelonasan tikra megalgin leves hakol." Right. So that's the one that kind of Tosos carved out. Right. He said, "Don't read it in as a linear mishnah. Kind of carve out the megalgin leves hakol." So what's going on? Afal gav de zenenev zelo chaser pater. Right, even though when somebody benefits from something and the other one doesn't cost him anything, you're potter, you don't have to pay for that value that you derived. I.e., right, let's say I forced you to build this higher wall, right, and now I put up the second wall. So even though I'm benefiting from what you did, right, and you don't lose by me putting up a second wall, me putting up a second wall. So really, I should be potter from having to pay you back. Nonetheless, mikol makom, says Tosos, kivan de gali daite de nichale bahagba, since you demonstrated that what he did for you was good and what you wanted, chayiv, you have to pay. V'chei mashma nami b'ketzer aregel, and that's the same thing that the Gemara, the Ikra Sugya of Zenan of Zelachas, which is in Bava Kama on Daf Chaf, says, d'ka'amar taima d'nikaf hamakif pater. The reason why is because he's being surrounded. But if he was the surrounder, similar to the Gemara we just saw before, which is why this is the next Mishnah, shma mina, Zenanev Zelachasr is pater.
You know, it's interesting because what the Gemara isn't saying, which is the implicit statement, is they're all doing this without talking to each other.
Yes.
There's nothing that's going to stop the guy that says, it's great that you did this. Do you mind that I'm going to put this second wall? In other words, like, you could always come up with an agreement. So it's obviously being done in the absence of conversation, which is why you're allowed to derive that.
Exactly. And that, by the way, is possibly why we need the chazaka, right? Becheska shalonasan, because they're not talking to each other. They may hate each other. Right. So then how do you ever ascertain who does, in fact, owe who and who, in fact, did pay for who? Right. Especially if there's history. Right. 50, 60, 70 years. How many times is the wall going to fall down? Maybe many times. Fine. Va'afilu hachi says to us, shama nikaf, when the nikaf himself gets up to do it and now build the second wall, he's chayiv. Kein nira li. That's how Tosis interprets it, which is how we interpreted the Mishnah. Inami, alternative shot. Hacha ze chaser hu. Alternatively, this is not a case of zen and of zel chaser. One guy is losing out. Why? Shigorin lo shigbiya hakosa le malame arba amos, kadesh lo yelo hezek ri'ya bishom enim imenu. Why is it that he's zechaser? Because what really happened, says Tosos, which is why it's becheska shelo nasan, unless you can prove that he was nasan, because I'm thinking there's two stories here. So we made an agreement that you're going to look into my property, I'm going to look into your property, it's no good. So we're going to build a higher wall so that there's no hezek ri'ya between us. But if the reason why I made the claim of, hey, dude, there's going to be hezek ri'ya higher here, so let's build a higher wall together, was really only because I wanted you to pay for half of the extension so that when I build my shed, I have a nice high shed. So that's clearly causing this other guy to lose out because he didn't really care about the hezek ri'ya. You convinced him to spend money on the shared wall in order to save money on your building your extension. That's not something that he's ever chayed for, and that's actual gorim hefsid. He actually had to spend money on that. So in such a case, says Tosfos, that's why we assume that Megalgam Vesakol. Meaning, if you actually did get him to pay, so then Megalgam Vesakol, you'll owe him money back. Which, again, is consistent with how we read the simple reading of the Mishnah. Now, when we look at the Gemara is going to go into a totally different angle for what the Chazaka is here, and how the time frame, in fact, might make a difference in terms of who owes who money. Now, the Gemara is going to take it out of context from our Mishnah, so once we figure out what the Gemara says and trying to plug it back into our Mishnah, is going to be a little bit complex. So that's going to be the third part of what we have to do in this sugya.